I want to open now for questions and discussions. Hopefully these rather provocative statements will have some reaction from you. And I have someone who asked a question. Father, may I respond to your question? You want to ask your question about anger management? Because this is a case in point. Anger management is something we hear a lot about. An excellent question.
Thank you, Father Ted. You've actually answered it in many different ways through the course of your sessions, but the question is, we hear the term anger management everywhere, all the time. And maybe you could speak, like direct some of these teachings that you've given to anger management, as opposed to what would we call it, anger eradication, something like this. And I've seen both in your presentation.
Right.
So.
Here's the way, by the way, in a way, your question is given your answer, my answer. That, you know, it's like when you have weeds in a garden and you're living in a place where these weeds spring up and you want to get rid of the weeds because they look so unsightly. And so what do? You take a weed whacker and you just cut the weeds and it looks nice for about 2 days. And then the weeds come back, usually with a vengeance, and become worse because the roots are still there. I think what anger management technique is a way to eliminate the ugly manifestation of anger between individuals and in groups. And in a way, it teaches people to control their anger in as much as the ugliness of it gets eliminated, at least temporarily. But as long as the roots are there and the roots are not eliminated, that anger is going to come back. And you know as well as I do, those of you who do gardening, cut a plant off at the top. It often strengthens the ability of the plant to produce more growth. So I think anger management is a stopgap measure, but certainly not a solution. Solution to the problem must come from the eradication, the deracination of the anger, taking the roots out. And that's what this has been about. There are certain things that we can do to cover the ugly manifestations of anger, but we can never eliminate it unless we get to the roots. And the roots of what we must do personally. By the way, that's what these social movements I was talking about, they always are just weed whacking the anger, controlling the more obvious manifestations of it. But they don't want to get to the roots of it because the roots are personal and require personal ascetical struggle. And people will do anything to avoid that, myself included. We always look for an easy way out, but there is no easy way out here. So I hope that that responds to what you were asking. Thank you for that question. Great question. Father John.
Thank you, Father Ted. I really appreciate this because we're living in a time and age where if you are watching what's going on in the world around us, especially in this country, the anger is being stoked. It's being stoked on both sides and in ways that we really haven't seen things like this happen here in this country for a long, long time. But I think the thing that really gives me a great deal of comfort is, and that's why the importance of the services, the importance of us really realizing what we're praying and seeking to pray that with great intent, is that how many times in the liturgy alone do we ask for peace? I mean, we ask for peace more than anything else. And that is one of the greatest antidotes that we can be able to have and offer to people, so that when they come into our church, they experience not only the beauty and the presence of God, but they can also come away with that peace, which the world desperately needs.
You know, that's so true. I had a student who became Orthodox several years ago, and he said the reason why he was attracted to Orthodoxy, quite frankly, is not because they were the most beautiful churches or because they were the most erudite clergy or whatever, but when I came into the church, he said, I was overwhelmed by the sense that what we were praying was not meant to excite my emotions, whether that was fear or love or excitement or enthusiasm or whatever, but it calmed me down and it gave me a sense of something beyond myself that was not dependent on me alone or on the priest alone or on, it wasn't a personality cult. In other words, it unstoked a lot of the emotional agitation that he was experiencing in his life. Not just anger, but things like hype. I mean, think about the hype that we associate with real religion. It's a very American thing, by the way. Real religion becomes emotionalism, you know? And the more emotional you are, the more religiously committed you're supposed to be. We all know that that can dissipate as fast as it arises. And so this is, I think, something that we have. I mean, just being in the services here, in this retreat, and listening to the words and being part of the mood, the calmness, has done more for me than any amount of enthusiastic participation I could have engaged in. So, yes, Father Deacon.
Deacon Nicholas, Mamie, Irvine, California. I was wondering if it'd be at all possible to have these slides made available to us, because there's obviously a great amount of wonderful research that has been put into these, and I personally would love to review all this information.
The man behind you, if he's willing to do that, we can do it.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Almost took my thunder. In August, you're retiring.
Yes.
Okay. So that means
you're going to have. Am I enthusiastic about that? I'm enthusiastic.
No, you're going to have more time to publish a book based on this.
Well, this is the first step.
I've ordered the first copy.
Okay.
How many?
It'll be yours.
You order? You'll be at profit in no time.
Thank you. I think these things. I think what makes this exciting for me is I come here not as an expert. I'm not a patristic scholar, and I'm not, but I am a believer, and I believe that the resources in our church are there to be excavated. And if I can excavate these to help myself overcome what is a real struggle with me, then as a fellow struggler, I just wanted to present to you something that might help you as well. I do think this is something that I don't think it's going to become less of a problem as the years go by. And I think the polarization and the kind of catastrophizing that we see going on all around us is bound to have an effect on our churches, and I think in many ways it already has. We have to stop it. Yes, Father.
This morning, Deacon Richard Schmidt from Saints Peter and Paul, Ben Lohman. I thought about what you had said yesterday during the reading of the epistle reading, actually the gospel too, talking about where what comes out of a person, and it's kind of that same idea with the anger. This whole thing, I think, is about holding it down. I have another question. Have you found any good phrases? I'm in a bocce ball club, and these guys get so angry and curse when they don't make a good roll, you know?
I will say in bocce, that is permitted.
So they're always cursing the ball, and I'm always telling them to bless, ask God to bless it, not damn it. But I just wonder if you had any, you've come up with some really good phrases or sentences from your research that you have found very helpful to tell people.
Well, the one thing, you know, when people come to confession quite regularly and talk about hatred and anger they have towards someone, I always tell them this. I said, this sounds trite, but I will repeat it and I want you to think about it. You can't hate or be angry totally with someone you're praying for, because they belong to you then. When you pray for someone, somehow they belong to you. They're kith and kin, you know? And I think the thing to do is, I said this even when a prison minister told me this, by the way, who was coming to my parish for a while, and he was coming to church and he said, there's a guy tailgating me the whole way. I was so angry. And then I thought, maybe I should move aside, because maybe his wife is in the hospital and he needs to get to her. Maybe he's not feeling well and he needs to get a place where he has to go. And I always take that. Maybe there's another explanation for this than what I'm assuming, because I have to tell you, I usually assume the worst, the most negative possible read of a situation. Come again?
CBT.
That's right, exactly. You have to change the framework by which, and that's what CBT is all about. And so changing that framework enables me somehow to defuse the anger, if not get rid of it completely. So Father Deacon, that's one thing. If you can pray for the person and try to imagine what is motivating that person to do what made you angry, that seems to be at least something that mitigates the power of the anger. So, and by the way, even when you oppose someone in your beliefs or in your organizational memberships or whatever, do we pray for each other or do we enemize, we have enmity against those people? Not everyone who is different from us is our enemy. It doesn't have to be that way. But do we believe that our way, here's what people ask me, do you believe your way as an Orthodox Christian is better than other ways? I say, yes, I do. That's why I'm Orthodox. That's not to say that everyone who is not me is evil. And then they say, well, then why should people come to you? Because if you come to our communities and you see something there that you want, you should investigate it more fully. If something there responds to a deep need in you, that means that we have something that you had not found before. And maybe it's time to examine that. I think that Americans, if we've learned anything in our culture, we're comparison shoppers. And the comparison shopper looks at different possibilities. We have to present a possibility that is not glitz and not flash of emotion, but something that's stable, strong, and there to be depended on. And I think that that is what we have to do in our churches, provide the alternative. We are an alternativist society, different from what's out there, and we are more concerned with providing the alternative than condemning who we're not. And that stands for itself. So, yes, Father Nathan.
Father Mark, one final quick question. We are not.
No. No. Yes, we decided we have the time for the questions now, so we'll do it now. And so the concluding session will be all Metropolitan Joseph's concluding remarks.
I don't want to be argumentative, but I think it's really important, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, truly. If priests leave here thinking that when a person is angry and comes to them, that the first step you tell them is to shut up, they can do great harm, and many priests have done great harm, or pastors, because, again, those who have suffered abuse, those who are in alcoholic spousal relationship, all kinds of people who have suffered abuse, I don't think shut up is the first step. The acknowledgement of pulling out the splinter, bandaging the broken leg, I agree with everything that's said once a person's on level ground. But if they're in a hole, they got to be taken out of the hole and put on the level ground. But it's not a small minority of people that come to us. Most of the people who come to me who are angry, and sometimes they don't realize until they're in their 40s and 50s, it's something buried in them that they have to not shut up about, but actually talk about in the right way. So we priests do damage, I think, if they just tell people shut up. If that's what the fathers say, well, that's what I got to tell you to say.
No. Listen. Okay. I think you have to speak up, but to the right people.
Yes.
Okay? This is the important thing. In other words, remember what this advice about be silent is about. When someone insults you right now, all right? If someone insults you right now, your reaction is to shut up, to be silent. But you're talking about a situation where someone has a wrong that was done years ago that is bearing this bitter fruit because they weren't able to speak up when they were being wronged. They weren't able to speak to the right people to help them when they were being injured. And that's what needs to be corrected. So in cases like this, if the anger is coming from that kind of hurt that is longstanding and inveterate and needs to be addressed, I think our duty is to tell them, you need to speak to the right people so that this can be taken care of. And here's the other part of it. You need to become part of a system that can help others who might be dealing with the same kind of issue. This I found to be really powerful. People who are dealing with a lot of these issues where they were hurt in the past realize that people are being hurt in the present by this. And some of the most healing things that can happen is that when they can use their pain and out of that pain, help other people who need to talk about this, need to speak up about it, and someone who's been through it can be of help, that's the person you need to talk to. But if anger is something that is sort of rising in direct response to an insult you're presently feeling, you know, that's what I think that advice is addressed to.
I agree.
But if there is a problem that is deep-seated, and believe me, I would be the last person on earth to say, ignore it. You know, just ignore
it.
Hold it in. That can't be done. That has to be treated systematically. What that means is not reacting in anger to everyone and everything around you, but taking that anger and speaking to the right people who can help you to overcome that endless source, that fountainhead of anger. It's really, and what you say is true. Isn't it increasing year by year? It seems like Every year I have more people who are maybe willing to talk about it than they were in the past. And then the difficult part, and here's where it comes down to the problem, having those people be able to talk to the right people who can, A, help them out to sort of purify that the wound and the scar that's there. And the second is helping that person to become empowered by helping other people whom they understand well and might be able to help because of what they do.
Thank you. That's kind of even like behind culturally the hashtag Me Too movement. As much as we're kind of uncomfortable with the whole thing, it's still a saying something has been wrong and I've been abused. And we have to, as Christians, we can say, well, there's something healthy in speaking up about that problem.
And in a movement like that, notice that the real healing doesn't come, I mean, this is a particularly good example, by just having this screed constantly delivered to the entire society. But when you have these group of people who have had similar experiences, then helping each other work through that, you know, because they did speak up. But that speaking has to be directed in a way that is therapeutic for them and for others as well. Remember, the purpose of all of this is therapy, psychotherapy, the healing of the soul. And I think the advice about when you feel insulted, not speaking out immediately, holding your silence, shutting up, is because you don't want to just increase the problem of anger in the immediate. But you do have to deal with what's there, the scars and the vestiges of hurt that's been done in the past.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Father. That's it? Okay.
Thank you very much.